Thanks again, everybody, for watching or listening, whether depending on where you're consuming this from. The newest episode of the Let's Talk podcast. Today I have Nate James with me and my co-host Joshua. This is Josh's first podcast co-hosting, so I wanted to get all my kinks where it's not a me thing. Or no, it's not a you thing, it's a me thing.
It's not a me thing, it's totally not you, me, Josh.
It's you. very, very excited to have Nate on. I got on this studio and got everything set up for recording. I was thinking, when was that actually the first time I actually ever talked to Nate? And so I went back through all my LinkedIn and it was me reaching out. We had just connected on LinkedIn and I did a typical sales pitch to him, trying to get him to sign up for our SIP. But ever since then, this man is, you know, somebody I text frequently. He's someone that I hold very near and dear to my heart. He's a good friend. We really, really love him as a person. You got anything else to add?
Oh, no, I mean, we chat all the time. If you guys don't know Nate, or if you haven't had the pleasure, Nate, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that you know a stranger. Is that correct?
That's kind of literally, how I was raised. Yeah.
I'm just saying, man, like you and I met for the first time and right out of the gate, you come, he's like, nah, get in here for a hug, man. So it's like you bring such a personal approach to literally every aspect of your life. And it's just, it's a rare thing nowadays to find somebody personable and so like intentional in the way that they approach life and they approach people they've known for a long time, but more importantly, people they've never met before. And it's refreshing.
Like you said earlier, people helping people. He's just one of those people. Yeah. One of those people.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very humbling. And you're right. You know, I was raised to kind of never meet a stranger and always talk to people you don't know because, in my background, which is a very religious Southern background, that's just the thing you did. That's how I was raised. So.
Yeah, and I think it's from that background, it's always the mindset, or at least this is my mindset because I was raised the same way. It's always the mindset of you never know if that person is having the worst day of their life.
Absolutely.
And you know what? It's a perfect opportunity to be a reflection of Christ. And maybe you're that reason their day turned around or something like that because just never know. What their life is at that moment.
Not just potentially being a reason to turn their day around, but you never know when you're going to be, as Paul said, the light of the world. Mm. You know, you never know when you're actually going to be the person that you could be a witness and you're not even knowing you're witnessing that day. So, it was just always treat others with the golden rule and, move through life the best way that you can. And just be a kind person. So I think that plays into a lot of what we do, both professionally and personally. And I think that's why I gravitated toward both of you. Because when Travis reached out with his sales pitch, I immediately was like, well, let's schedule a meeting and talk anyway.
It was one of those, oh, bless your heart, but we'll talk anyway.
And like I said, this is why I'm not a salesperson. I'll talk the brand. I'm definitely good being someone that's loud, but when it comes to the actual sales, I fall flat.
I know. It's good, though.
You were great, buddy. You were absolutely great. It was a great way for us to actually connect. So I'm happy you did it.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. See, everything happens for a reason.
Everything does.
But talking more about the personal, I fortunately, and Josh fortunately, have gotten the time to spend time with you, kind of learn who you are outside of the professional world. We'll dive into the professional world because I want everybody to know what you do, and you do as much self-promoting as possible. That's kind of a whole reason why I wanted to throw this podcast together, just so people can have the platform to show who they are behind the product. So who are you? Give us, kind of a history of Nate James. What makes you you? But, anybody that doesn't quite know you yet and wants to, Tell us about Nate.
What's your Nate James elevator pitch?
There you go.
Oh my. It was a cold, blistery Sunday in May. I was born in South Carolina. For those of you that don't hear the Southern accent very often, it's because I lived on the West Coast for about 8 years in Seattle in my 20s and intentionally tried to lose my Southern accent because of some of the jobs that I had out there. And people just look at you kind of weird when you sound like you just rolled off the farm. But
That's how I look at Josh every day.
But ironically, as I grow older, I wish I had never done that, kind of getting back to your roots sort of thing. So as I said earlier, raised in an extremely Southern family, very large Southern family. And we were very poor. I think that drives a lot of who I am professionally today as well. We were a very poor family, but we had everything we needed. And we never knew as kids that we were as poor as we were. Our family all gathered around and, you know, our lives were centered on faith and spirituality. And, you know, we celebrated that together very often. My parents actually had us in the church constantly. My grandparents formed the church that I went to as a child, actually helped build it with their own hands. We were very actively involved in the church, in our church community, and not just from a community perspective with the congregation, but also at a familial level. You know, everything we did revolved around our life in Christ and, you know, how we were to treat others and how we were to act on a day-to-day basis. And we never actually did very well at it as children, I don't think, but as adults, it's funny, I talk with cousins and we sort of all gravitate back to, you know, what we were instilled with as children. And, you know, I am extremely blessed and very thankful for that.
Would you say, you know, because you grew up, you know, not knowing you were poor, but, you know, growing up poor, because I've noticed about you that you're an extremely humble person in everything that you do, the way that you talk to people. You always take it from a stance of humility. Would you say that that would probably be where that was instilled because of how you were raised and, you know, not realizing that you're poor, realizing that you had everything that you needed? Mm-hmm. Would you say that that's where your level of humility comes from?
I think that's definitely part of it, for sure. I think that's a huge part of it, actually. It was partially just not knowing any better. You know, outside of our family, even our church congregation, you know, they weren't extremely rich people either. So, it takes a village, so to speak, and, you know, learning what I did, not just from my family, I also learned from the other elders in my life. It wasn't until I probably got into high school that I started realizing we were as poor as we were. I remember the first,
like, being humbled by some high schooler telling you how
I remember the first day of school one year, we had to, I think it was ninth grade English class, we had to write a composition about our summer, and I see all these kids just furiously writing away, and I'm like, I chopped wood, I worked.
You're talking about a farm boy right here, so I can relate to all that. Let's see, I loaded a manure spreader several times.
You know, and everybody's talking about their big vacation, like to Disney World and all this other stuff. And I was like, we went to visit my aunt on her farm and do stuff with her family. So, you know, but again, it gets back to, you know, there's that humbleness in being poor. There's the humbleness in, I think, living your life for Christ. I think we're taught to be humble and to, you know, we may not agree with everyone and every path that we cross in terms of how they live their life or what they do on a day-to-day basis or even how they conduct business. But we should still appreciate the fact that they're another human being, and we should still want them to see a different light in us. So I think that's where a lot of it comes from also. I don't see myself as humble. I see a different side of me.
Right.
Our child might tell you I'm not humble at all.
Well, kids are brutal, and yeah, they're
gonna be just the worst.
Yeah, they're liars. Let's just all
my teenager man. Oof. She can just be so brutally honest, and just like, I don't know, like to be proud of, you know, the honest person that you are, or just to be hurt by what you said. But man, it's
Well, thank you. Yeah, I don't know how to take all of that, so I guess I'll just say thank you.
growing up and you know, being in that kind of environment, I think both Josh and I can relate. Both raised in, you know, spiritual households. If in the summer, if you weren't doing anything, you were at church camp. It feels like they, no matter what week it was, there was some variation of church camp when we were kids. So
yeah,
you know, just always growing up in that. But you know, going from younger to maybe your, you know, teenage years, who were maybe one or a couple, you know, people that probably influenced you the most into kind of becoming who you are today? You know, who's kind of been, I could probably name a handful of my, you know, people that have kind of been there for me, crucial parts of my life, and really molded me into becoming who I am today. So maybe just, you know, who are a couple of those people for Nate James?
Yeah. Hands down, my grandmother on my mother's side, my ma, as I called her, she influenced so much of my life. Even today, she is a huge part of who I am. I think who our whole family was. She was maybe 5'4", if that, tiny woman with this huge, very large personality, you know, and she was a spitfire. And she just instilled everything in me, and I think I can speak for a lot of my cousins as well when I say in them, in terms of who we are, not only as a family but individuals. This was a woman who, I mean, when you say someone lives for Christ, she was like the epitome of that. She used to tell stories. My mom and I actually lived with her until I was 2.5 when my mother remarried. And so she was an integral part of my early years. And then even after my mother remarried and we moved out, you know, obviously still a huge part of who I was. But, you know, she used to tell these stories of how she would take me to the grocery store and she would kind of train me in a way, you know, to reach out to other people. Like her favorite story was pushing me through the grocery store in a buggy and me reaching out to strangers in the grocery aisle and saying, "Do you know that Jesus loves you?" You know, and
I love that.
That was the sort of thing that she would train us to do as her grandkids, to instill in us to talk to other people, to be with others, and to push that. And, you know, as I got into my teenage years, there were some things about myself that I started to realize that, I genuinely struggled with. And I, you know, just to lay it out there, I think everybody knows anyway, you know, I'm gay. And that was not something that my family really dealt with very well. Not just from our religious background, but also from, where we were. And, it was something I hid. I dealt with it on my own for quite a while. And then an unfortunate event happened and my family found out. And I was so afraid of losing her. Like, to the core of everything that I was, I could have lost my entire family, and nothing against anyone else. My mother, my father, I love them deeply. Nothing against anybody. But I was at my core so afraid of losing her. And I will never forget her telling me, she's like, I may not agree with this, but I will deal with it. But at the end of the day, you're a child of Christ and Christ loves you. And it's not my job to judge you. It's my job to help you through life. And that to me said so much. Because I was questioning everything in my life. I was genuinely questioning, am I going to hell? Does God love me? you know, why I would pray every single night, please don't let me be this way. Please keep me from being this way. Please do anything. I'll do whatever you want, God. Just take this away from me. And he didn't. But he gave me people in my life that would help me see that he's still there. And that he is still with me no matter what. And I think if she gave me nothing else in my entire life, if nothing else prior to that point had ever happened with her from a religious perspective, that one moment would have solidified the rest of my life. There were times I genuinely thought about taking my life and ending it because I didn't know how to deal with it. But after that conversation, I felt better.
You know, it's funny. It's always those moments where you feel the presence of God, right? Yeah. It's the unexpected. It's the out of nowhere. We're like, oh, okay,
you did hear me,
right? We always expect it's going to be this, you know, big reveal, right?
Yeah,
God is so big; it has to be a big reveal. But sometimes, and it's in that book and the Bible as well, where it wasn't the storm, it wasn't the earthquake, it was the still small voice. So those little moments right there are the still small voice.
You're absolutely right. There's a guy I follow on LinkedIn. His name is Matthew Wells. If you don't follow him, you should. He's in Jacksonville, Florida. He's in sales as well. Loves his family above all other things, you know, and he displays himself on LinkedIn very well in terms of how he portrays himself, not just as a father, but a spiritual person also. And he actually had a post I was reading earlier today where he's like, you know, my testimony is not like the testimony you hear from a lot of people. It's not church pew worthy. It's not this big reveal. I wasn't going down this huge wrong path or anything. I was just raised in a way that was based on faith and spirituality and Christ. And, you know, at the end of the day, that was all I needed because he was there the whole time. And I think that sometimes we just need a reminder of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You mind?
Yeah, no.
So it's funny.
You're the co-host, man.
Speaking of that, so a couple of years back, our middle child, Kennedy, and I'm going to try my best not to get emotional. So, but anyway, she went to the hospital. She had had a fever for 3 or 4 days. It was 105. So we end up going to the hospital and ends up being admitted. And it was right during the height of COVID. And a couple of things were that still small voice for me where I'm like, crying out to God, like, I need you to be here. I need you. The first was the fact that it happened during COVID pushed the hospital to do blood work 4 days earlier than they normally would. And the blood work is what found the inflammation markers that had her admitted, the inflammation throughout her body. Typically, they say, wait 5 to 6 days for fevers and then come back if they don't go away. So there was an anomaly with kids at the time called MISC, and it's a multi-symptom inflammation disorder. And it was just an anomaly with COVID to where post-COVID, after they recovered, their body's immune system freaks out and starts attacking the body. So the fact that that was prevalent at the time caused them to do the blood work, 4 days earlier. Answer to prayer number one. Prayer number two, they found out she had what's called Kawasaki's disease. So it's kind of, it mimics MISC. That's why she was admitted. So with the Kawasaki's, a kid gets a virus, a couple of weeks later, the body freaks out for some odd reason they don't know, and it starts to attack their immune, or starts to attack their body. So answer number two is we live in Columbus, Ohio. That happens to be 20 minutes from best children's hospital in the country, children's hospital nationwide. But we were in the hospital for a week. I think we were on day three to where they, there's a little miracle drug that they can give, but they don't want to administer it unless they absolutely have to. So we're on day three. And I remember getting in the car, driving home to see my oldest, just to, dad's okay, mom's okay, sissy's okay. and, you know, pick up a couple of things. And I get in the car, and as soon as I started, it was on a Christian station we have here in town, 104.9 The River. And the song that came on was that You Walk Me Through Fire, pull me from, you know, You Walk Me Through Fire. And I can't tell you how much I needed that song at that very moment. And it was kind of that moment where God spoke in that still small voice saying, I've got you. I've got her.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be okay. So, you know, little moments like that where you expect that God's going to appear in this grand spectacle, and the doctor's going to come in and say, you know, we have the solution, we have the answer, and you're begging for that and you're praying for that, and then all of a sudden it's that little moment in your car on your way to get some clothes to wear, a song or a text or something comes across where you're like, okay, all right, I'll be okay.
It's so, the small moments. Yeah,
yeah.
It really is.
So I appreciate that, man. I mean, it's like so many people who expect these grand gestures throughout their life that they miss those small moments.
I think if there were anybody else, because you actually asked about two people and I went on a tangent. if there were anybody else, it would actually be my stepdad, who became my actual father. He adopted me when I was in the second grade. And we've had a very tumultuous relationship, my entire life. It was just recently actually that he and I reconnected a couple of years back. We didn't talk for many, many years, from the time I was a teenager until recently. And, I've luckily been able to tell him, that, you know, the things that he instilled in me as a child from a work ethic perspective, that's where I get a lot of my work ethic. And, you know, for him being a farmer / mechanic type of person who comes from very humble beginnings, that was very meaningful for him. So he would be the other person probably.
Cool. I just hearing, you know, you talk about your personal life, I can see why it's very easy, especially for me and Josh, it was, to gravitate towards you on the professional side, because I think the best people in this industry are able to take who they are personally and confidently take it into the channel, because I think a lot of the times, at least nowadays, people have an image problem, and sometimes they want to pretend to be something that they're not. And I think that when you're finally at peace with who you actually are, I think that's kind of it's when you gain your superpower in the professional world. And I just, I love that. I love hearing about you, man. I love to learn something new about people that I didn't know before. And so I appreciate your honesty, you know, and you opening up to us on that. So thank you. I really appreciate that, Nate.
Oh, no problem, man.
Sorry. My voice is starting to crack. I'm starting to lose my voice. It feels like, but you know, that's
he's starstruck by us. Yeah, I am. Completely starstruck.
But you know, we talked about the personal, but I also want this to be an opportunity for you to rep your guys' brand, rep what you do, you know, maybe kind of anybody that doesn't know you on a professional side, you know, kind of give maybe a brief history of first of your time in the tech community, building up to where you're at now, what you're doing, and then selfless plug as much as you want to anybody you want to.
Wow. Where to begin? I guess way back at the beginning. So I've been in the tech industry since September of 2000. So coming up on 24 years, I moved back to the East Coast from Seattle because my grandmother, she became ill with cancer and I wanted to be closer to the family, but I didn't necessarily, I was from Greenville, Spartanburg area of South Carolina.
Okay.
So I didn't necessarily want to go back there because it was too close to all the family again. I was still in that rebellious 20 something phase. So I went to Charleston and, it was a quick drive if I needed to get up there. And I took a temporary job working for a company at the time called Trivergent. And they very quickly, after I started working for them, merged with another company out of the Midwest in St. Louis by the name of Gabriel and became Nuvox Communications. Nuvox. I still to this day say I heart Nuvox. It was such a great beginning in my tech career. In fact, I'm going to give him a little plug. One of my competitors, Sean Avrasano at TPX, was my first boss in the channel. And for those of you that know Randy Friedberg, when he was a channel manager way back in the day at Nuvox, I was his originally his project coordinator for all of his installs, and then turned into sales support for him after that. So I started in project management, moved into sales support. Nuvox acquired NewSouth in, I think, 04. And at the time, they asked me to move to Florida and take over a sales support area throughout Florida and the Gulf Coast. So I moved down to Orlando with my family. That's kind of where my Orlando roots began. So I've been here for 20 years this year. Nuvox acquired a couple of companies like Florida Digital Networks, then in 2010, we sold off to Windstream. So there was the whole Windstream acquiring Paytech, and Cavalier was acquired by Paytech and all these other companies. So the Windstream is kind of funny. It became this huge melting pot of all these different organizations, but there were some amazing people that worked there. And I learned a ton from those folks, like Michael Board, who used to run their account management team. I actually moved into account management under Nuvox, and then with Windstream as well. And then once we acquired Paytech, I moved into more of a channel specific type of Southeastern role with account management. When I moved to Nitel 6 years ago, I loved the company. It felt like it was small, like Nuvox used to be, still had that entrepreneurial spirit. But it felt like this organization where they knew they were doing some things wrong at the time that they needed to correct. And taking care of their clients was one of them. So I actually moved in under, for those that know Jason Deshawn and Taylor Castronova from back in the channel world, I moved into Nitel under them and formed our account management team at the time. And then I moved into my current role, which is VP of sales for the Eastern region. It'll be 4 years ago in March. I think I took the job 1 week prior to COVID shutting everything down in 2020.
Oh, so man.
That was a great challenge. but, you know, I got to tell you, Nitel's home. It feels like I said, I still say to this day, I heart Nuvox. Nitel is the new Nuvox. For those of you partners that knew Nuvox or Paytech, that's, I always tell people, you know, think of us that way, you know, that same type of from the top down partner experience and customer experience culture, and taking care of what you do and do it the way you say you're going to do it well, be very intentional about it. That's the type of culture that we have here. In fact, we just came off of our sales kickoff last week, and I was telling some of my leaders, I was like, that was the best kickoff I've been to in years, because you guys took it to a cultural level. It wasn't just this, you know, education being spat at you. We had that. We had a lot of amazing education. But on day two, we took it down this whole different cultural path. We brought in this guy who talked to us about being us on our best day. And it wasn't just this, let's have a motivational speaker. I mean, the whole room was involved. There were skits, there was improvisation, there was all this other stuff, and there were tears. I mean, we shared some very personal stuff together in terms of how we feel about other people and what they mean to us. And this is work, you know? I mean, and to me, that was such a powerful thing to walk out of a sales kickoff knowing that your leaders understand that you really are not just saying you're family, but you really are family. And they wanted to drive that home and have everyone come out a well-oiled machine from last week. And that's exactly what we're seeing this week. You know, we've taken this machine that was already just killing it, and we're moving it to another level now. You know, and my team even went so far as to change our team name. You know, we were formerly Team Beast. you know, East region, and, you know, we're the beasts conquering everything, and that's great. And we've loved that. But, you know, now we're team 212 because we're adding an extra degree to everything that we do to take it from being hot water at 211 degrees to boiling water at 212 so that we can fuel the engine with steam.
I love that.
It's like the team's just embracing it and running with it. And everything that we do and how we take care of our partners is all driven by that type of culture.
I know that Team Schloop was number two on that decision, right? It just fell short of becoming your team. I know Team Schloop was almost the team name, right?
Dude, I'm you know, we voted. It was so close. There was one person that wouldn't let it go.
But then they realized Schloop sounds too much like poop.
Yeah.
I think you touched on something really important, though, and I was just talking to another guest for last week during a recording, Emily Champagne, about how a lot of people like to post on LinkedIn and stuff that, you know, your company only views you as a number. As soon as, you know, you're dead, they're going to replace you, yada, yada. And that, you know, your organization can't be your family. But I think it's important to say that I think organizations can be your family. Yeah. And I think that just some of us just aren't a fit for some. But when you truly do find that organization that makes you feel like a genuine person, like they actually care about you, that's when the magic happens. And so I think it's important to definitely evangelize the fact that there are organizations out there that will care for you as a human. You just got to find them. But they're out there. They're not unicorns. People actually want to invest time into you. They want to invest time into the people that fit that culture too. So it's, you know, it's about finding that culture and not really giving up, because it can be found. I feel the same way here with, you know, we helped us a little bit more. We are a family run company. A lot of the employees here are actual family, but you know, we try to keep that same personal touch, whether we're dealing with a small business or an enterprise business. So I think that, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's a very important message to take into the professional world.
Yeah, we're definitely not perfect, you know, and we'll be the first to say that. You know, our CEO is, her name's Margie Shaw, and she's very driven around the fact that we need to understand that we're not perfect. We always need to be evolving. We always need to be getting better. And we need to be very purposeful and intentional about where we're good and continue to get better in those areas. So she's driving that culture from the top down. I got to say, it's extremely refreshing. It's great to be working here. So please send all your referrals over. You know, we'll take care of it.
Give a quick, you know, what do you guys do? You know, what do you guys specialize in? You know, if anybody is looking for something, I want them to know what you do in case they need you for something.
Yeah. So at the heart of everything we do, we're a global network as a service company. You know, we have our own platform, our own backbone that we work off of both domestically and internationally to fuel basically getting anyone and any organization anywhere to any of their applications securely and safely, so that they can continue to do the things that they do, which is run their business. They shouldn't have to worry about their day-to-day network. That should be something that we take off their plate. The other part of that is we're highly customizable, and I'll use the word boutique. You know, no one customer should be expected to be the same as another customer. And while we do have bundles that we sell, you know, it's also a very highly customizable world. You need to understand what your client's doing, understand what their pain points are, understand what their users are actually using the network on internally. You know, it's one thing to talk to the CIO at an organization, but it's a totally different conversation where you're talking to someone who actually uses the network on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
To understand what their pain points are and what you need to make sure you're solving throughout the entire organization. So we take a very strategic approach. There's obviously a lot of transactional business in what we do also, and we love that. But I think where I love really getting in the trenches with our partners is where we can work to understand the partner's business, understand what they do, how they go to market, and then work with them to sell specific solutions to clients that will not only grow their bottom line as a partner of Nitel, but also make sure that client continues to grow their bottom line because they're not worried about the day-to-day involvement in their network. And that network as a service could be as simple as connectivity, or it could be a lot more intricate and contain security and SD-WAN or cloud connections to AWS, Azure, et cetera. You know, most of the major UCaaS providers are all peered into our network as well. So providing that overall encompassing customer experience at all levels, no matter what we're providing for them, and then working to provide intelligence back to the partners and the customers to help them more effectively run their business, that's gold. And that's why I'm here. That I love what we do and I love how we provide it.
So going off of that, you being a, you know, a VP of a region, so you know, you're a lead and you lead a team. So what do you take from a leadership position to your team that you felt like has made you like that beast of the East, that 212 where you take it an extra degree further? What do you as Nate James do with your team that you feel others can you know pull from? Because as leaders, if you sit here and say, you know, I know everything and I can't be taught anything, you're obviously setting yourself up for failure. Yeah. So what do you feel like has been something that you've gained as a leader that would be valuable to other leaders in the industry?
Empathy.
No, that's good.
Yeah. I think a lot of folks come into a title and, you know, they assume they've made it to the top. But you know, when you get to a certain level, strictly my opinion, mm-hmm. I'll throw that out there. This is strictly the opinion of Nate James and no one else.
It's a fact. Take it to the bank.
I think you have to be a servant leader. Mm. I think you have to, you know, you've made it here, but you need to understand that you're really now here. And there's all these other people above you that you're serving. You know, your job is to take obstacles out of their way, to listen to them, to understand what they're going through, whether it is professionally or personally. You know, we are all people who have lives outside of work, and there's a lot of things outside of work that can influence your day to day. You know, so are you a person who is being your best you today? Or is there something preventing you from doing that? And let's talk through what that might be. And if you need to take a personal day to figure out whatever you're working through, then by all means, go do it. We've got your back. The team will step in and help you. But I think understanding where your employees are coming from, knowing what they're going through, understanding the other organizations are part of your team as well, even though they may not report to you, you still need to support them and make sure they get what they need to help make your partner successful. I think I don't want to say it's not rocket science, because all of that is hard. And I think a lot of people never learn it, unfortunately, but you have to be a servant leader, in my opinion.
I mean, that's good. I think the one thing in all of us as being human is admitting that aspect of us, knowing that, you know, there's always something for us to learn. There's always the ability to open ourselves to serve others instead of being self-serving.
Yeah, one of the things good. I always tell my team is whenever I'm trying to roll something out, whether doing it well or poorly, is this is not a dictatorship. You know, so let's talk through this. Is this not going to work? If you see any kinks in this plan, now's the time for you to speak up because you are part of this team. Let's talk through it, and maybe we need to change the plan together somehow. But you know, having the team be part of the decision-making process and having them understand why certain things need to be done a certain way. Also, you know, you got to communicate. You have to communicate well, and you have to communicate to individuals, which means you have to actually get to know all of your employees. Hmm. You know, it's like having 9 children. Every one of them is different. They respond differently to certain stimuli. And you have to learn that. If you don't, you're just preaching and getting no message through.
Yep. Yep.
That's good.
I think I wish that more leaders in our space would have that same mentality. I think that there's still a good amount of people like Nate out there that, you know, I see it from other organizations. There's some really great leaders in this industry, but unfortunately, there's also some organizations that just are kind of missing the point. So hopefully, hopefully hearing it on here will make them wake up a little bit. So I appreciate that, Nate. I appreciate you coming on. I like to end most of the podcast asking the guest, when you're not being a dad, when you're not being a family man, when you're not doing the professional life, what's a hobby that you do to kind of, blow off steam, just something that just helps you relax? What's Nate James doing in his free time?
Three things. I either go to the gym and try and work out. Traveling kind of puts a little bit of a stifler on that, but you have to work it out. I love going for long walks. So that's typically what I do. If I can't get in a good gym workout when I'm traveling, I'll go for a 3 or 4 mile walk. I love to read, whether it is a professional self-help book, which I'll be honest, I don't read a lot of those. It's my personal time. I don't necessarily want to spend time on that. So, because it just makes me think about work. So,
yep.
But if anybody's got some good sci-fi or spy thrillers out there, I'll take a few suggestions on those.
Oh yeah, I'm the same thing, man. I'd rather spend my time in somebody else's world than my own. So I'm the same way when I read too. I spend enough time in my world.
Yeah. I read things if I have to, or if somebody's like, you really should, because, and they give an example of why, then I'm a little more inclined to do that. But I try to carve out a little bit of time each day, even if it's just for 30 minutes during the workday for self-improvement. So I'll typically try and fit those things into that time slot.
Very good.
I love it. I appreciate it. Awesome, man. Well, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
41 minutes of talking to Nate James. That's I love it. Couldn't have asked for a better build up to the lunch hour. So I appreciate you, man. Thanks for being on. And
absolutely love both of you.
We'll be seeing
you
soon.
All right, man. Appreciate you more than Mr. Sir there. Nate James. Appreciate your time, brother.